what would you look at that? It's Thursday. It is December 15, 2022. I'm Mr. Warren Hayes. We're going to be talking about AEW Dynamite. We're going to be reviewing last night's edition as I'm recording this. On the Thursday following, per usual, here on YouTube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. That's where we're at. Why don't you give this video a like and a subscription? Why don't you? I mean, we're 10 days out of, before Christmas Day. It is the season of giving. Give me your subscription. No. At the very least, I like to believe anyway. I don't know. But I like to feel like I've earned your subscriptions, right? I like to feel like I work for them. So you look, if you're feeling jolly, holly jolly, and you just want, yeah, let's go. Let's give them a subscription. Go right ahead. You know, that's cool. Of course I'll appreciate it, but make me work for it. And look at it and say, hey, you pal with the glasses, dance monkey, and watch me go. I'll put on a jig. I'll two-step for you if that's what it takes. That's what we'll do. But no, but if you do want to subscribe, honestly, it would be greatly appreciated. And if you're listening to this on your favorite podcast feed, thank you very much. You know, 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, they do the trick. 5-star ratings on Spotify, those are awesome as well. Appreciated a great deal. But thank you for listening. There's not much meta in regards to AEW over the past week or so, or even over last night's Dynamite. And I'm pretty sure folks backstage, the executives, the vice presidents, the owners, I'm pretty sure everyone is happy that that things seem to be simmering down when it comes to, outside business, or at least news cycles being preoccupied with AEW events, things related to AEW. I'm pretty sure they're happy about that, pretty sure. It's like, oh, good, it's a full week without, shit hitting the fan. Good. Because really, there's not much going on. Like, outside of the Ring of Honor weekly TV being shown on Honor Club news, there hasn't been much on on that front to discuss. And I'm not going to retread that. I talked about it on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show proper this week. So if you want my full thoughts on the Ring of Honor television ending up on Honor Club, the revamped Honor Club, which is going to be relaunched and so on and so forth. My full thoughts are on the podcast this week. But, the main bullet point to me is that it's a big L for Tony Khan. And it's a big L for Ring of Honor. It's the worst case scenario. There are other business perspectives that you can consider here, will this have some kind of impact on negotiations moving forward? Because I think Tony felt very confident that he would be able to find a spot. There are still many unanswered questions in regards to how this was negotiated, how it happened. Did Tony shop around, or did he just stick to Discovery Warner Discovery properties? Outlets, broadcasters. So, like I said, I'm not going to break down everything. I've already walked the dog on that one, and there hasn't been any new news. But, so you can go check that out. And Ring of Honor, in and about itself, as Tony said, going to scale down the presence on AEW Dynamite moving forward, according to him. But we're going to talk about that as we get into it right now. Let's go. The Dynamite that happened on December 14, 2022 from the Colwell Center in Garland, Texas, started off with the fourth match in the Best of Seven series between Death Triangle and the Elite. It's exciting stuff. Still feeling good. So Death Triangle coming into this match, leading the series 2-1. Penta and Nick are countering each other early on here. So, you know, they're already setting up the story, being in the groove for, hey, you know what? Hey, you know what? We don't, we've been wrestling each other quite a bit recently. You know, we know how things are going to work out here. We know how, what you're going to do. So some good countering here. I you know, this is a good little bit of storytelling here. But early on in the match, Nick Jackson does a dive and he hurts his ankle. So he hobbles over to the Elite to tag out. Cutler attends to him, you know, and then even Kenny and Matt come in to tag. And Nick is like, no, tag to this guy. So he gets sent to the back. And I don't know if people are smartening up or maybe they just didn't care because it's Nick Jackson. I don't know. That sounds overtly cruel for some reason. I don't know. But I don't know if people are just like, I didn't see the tons of concern trolling that I usually see. It's like, you know, where you see, oh, of course he hurt himself. Oh, flippy dudes and all that, you know. They need a performance center. All that bullshit, you know. I didn't see much of that. So I don't know if it's, or I don't know if it's just people finally smartening up to workers working. Because I thought this was well done. But here's the one thing, folks, in case you're always on the fence. Let me help smarten you up to the business. as if I have any advice. But no, but for real. The thing that you always have to look for in these injury angles is whether or not they're showing the injured party on camera or not. If it is a legitimate injury, if it is a true to form injury, they're going to cut away from whoever's hurt and they're not going to put emphasis on it. They're not going to show it on TV. Commentary is going to be advised to not talk about it, to try and change the subject. Sometimes it's difficult. Like when Hangman Adam Page got knocked out fighting Jon Moxley a couple of months ago, it was difficult for commentary to not talk about it because there was literally no other action going on. There was genuine concern, but you'll recall that they did not really show, aside from really at first, they did not show Hangman being attended to by the medical staff all that much. They did at first, but then they cut away from it. So that's always the thing. So if this had been an unscripted, unplanned angle, they would not have been, you know, you wouldn't have seen Brandon Cutler doing the spray thing and all of that, and commentary making a bit of, you know, being light on it. It's like, oh, is that an advantage that the Young Bucks have to have attendance ringside? You know, like they wouldn't have done that. So always look for the camera. What's the camera doing? Is the camera showing the injury, showing what's going on? If so, it's usually a work. But give it time to breathe. You don't have to jump on Twitter the minute that it happens and be like, ugh! You don't. You just let it breathe a bit. See where it leads you. So once Nick Jackson gets sent back, it's basically a 3-on-2 situation. Rey Fénix hits a topiconhilo on Kenny Omega, standing shooting star press by Pack on Matt Jackson. Matt Jackson actually does a very cool, and we've seen him do this before, but it's still very cool when he does it. Northern Lights suplex while landing into a combo, into a pin combination. He did that on the Lucha Brothers. That was really cool. Kenny Omega does the You Can't Escape on Pac and the Snapdragon suplexes as well. Pac interrupts the Rise of the Terminator and lands a slingshot cutter. Penta Fear Factor's Matt on the apron. Made in Japan by Penta on Kenny Omega. And Rey Fénix does an inverted frog splash, which fucking rules when you think about it. Think about it for a second. Think of what a frog splash looks like and what it takes to do it, and you're doing it backwards. It's fucking Rey Fénix, man. Nick Hubble's back to the ring finally. He's like, no, I'm going to do this. And you have Michael Nakazawa going, don't do it. Don't go. And he's like, no, fuck you. I'm going to go help my brothers in arms and my actual brother and my brother in arm. My arm. And he actually gets the hot tag. And he's taking everyone out. So don't worry. The injury was, at this point, you should be like, oh, so the injury was, yes, the injury was work. Don't worry. Rey Fénix interrupts a super kick by Nick, and Penta runs in. And as Fénix is holding the leg, Penta runs in. He's got the ring hammer. Rick Knox is Rick Knoxing it up. He's just like, he got distracted by something shiny. You know, someone flashed a silver dollar in the audience, and it caught the light just in a very, very specific way, and Rick Knox was like, ooh. So he didn't see any of this, of course. Penta runs in, he's got the bell hammer, and he uses it on the hurt ankle, which surprises Rey Fénix, because Fénix is like, I didn't want this to happen. Fénix has been anything but consistent here, where he's like, man, this, I hate this, but okay, we're a team kind of thing. You're my brother. Look, let's just move on. Like, he's not pulling a swerve. He's not pulling a Keith Lee. He's not leaving folks. He's just like, all right, fine. He locks in a leg bar and Nick taps. Death Triangle lead 3-1 now. Fun little scenario here. I like this. I like the idea of the Elite being down. Now they're going to come back here. Anyone who's wondering, oh, maybe they'll finish this at, you know, it won't reach game seven. It's, no, it will. It's come on now. Come on now. At this point, I think it's fairly clear. And especially with the promo that Kenny gave after the match, where he challenges. The Death Triangle to a no DQ match. He started by saying, let's make all weapons legal. It's like, let's just go no disqualification. So next week's match is no DQ. And then later on in the evening, we learn that the two remaining matches, should we go to seven, wink, wink, will have stipulations as well. Match 6, the December 28 edition of Dynamite, will be a Falls Count Anywhere match, which I am stupid excited for. I think this has the potential to rule with these six guys. Like, I am stupid excited for this. And if a seventh match is required, wink, wink, on January 11th, that is going to be an Escalera de la Muerte match, a ladder match. And I'm like, fuck you. Fuck you. In case you're new here, I am burnt out on ladder matches. I'm completely spent.
Oh, but Warren.
Yes.
Warren, it is. The Lucha Bros and the Elite and the Pack, it's going to be great because these guys are great at ladder matches.
It's like, I guess, like, I'll probably end up going, okay, this ruled. But for every good, fun, different ladder match, and I don't remember seeing a different ladder match. Like, when's the last time we saw a different ladder match, right? There's like 20 others throughout my viewing cycle, which are fine or just stink, or they're trying too hard. And look, you can absolutely chalk this up to me watching so much wrestling and ladder matches being like par for the course now as opposed to anything special, you can absolutely chalk this up to me just being burnt on them because I watch so much wrestling. And I it's a fair comment. It's fair commentary. I'm all right with that. But man, I mean, even even if you watch AEW, only AEW, they pull out ladder matches every 6 weeks or so. That's too many. And the ladder match was it All Out, right? Remember the ladder match for the casino chip thing? It wasn't good. And the guy, because we're at a point where the guys. We're at a point where the guys and the ladies and the gals who put them together, they're like, well, everyone has seen everything. So now we have to, they all feel like they have to come up with these really intricate spots because we've seen so many fucking ladder matches. And it all ends up going, well, what's the last great spot? The Cody and Sammy cutter off the ladders? That was a fucking awesome spot because we don't remember the matches anymore. We don't even remember the spots. And I think that's a sign of saturation, of oversaturation. And now people like, ladder matches have all become like a question of how are we going to do the biggest spots possible? You know, the Halloween Havoc ladder match that WWE had, that stunk. And, I'm just spent on them. I'm just completely, completely burnt. Completely burnt. So that's whatever. But the false count anywhere, that's going to be a riot. That's going to be fun as hell. Now we can sit down and say to ourselves, oh shit, Ray Phoenix and Matt Jackson are going to throw themselves off of everything. Right? I'm super stoked for that one. That'll be a blast. And that's something you don't see a lot of. And you see, so then they pull it out with people who can pull it off and do crazy ass shit. I love it. And here's another talking point here about this match. Remember how, everyone was talking about, and I think I mentioned this before. Apologies if I've talked about it on the review show in the past, but remember when everyone was telling us like, oh, Kenny Omega's broken. He's in pieces. He's never going to wrestle like he used to wrestle ever again. And I'm looking at him in this tournament and sure, he's not carrying a 35 minute main event. That's fine. That's a whole other thing to put a human's body through. But I'm looking at him here, landing the snapdragons, doing the dives, and he was doing this on the last in the best of series match that they had, a couple of weeks ago when they won. I'm like, I don't see any rust on Kenny Omega. I don't see Kenny Omega looking haphazard or a step behind or unable to land shit. He looks fine. He looks like the Kenny I know. Of course, he naturally getting older like we all do. So maybe if you were to get into the minutia and you were to break down matches he had in 2014 as opposed to some that he's having today, there's probably some stuff that he doesn't quite do as crisply or, with as much of a spring in his step anymore. But I'm looking at Kenny Omega going, I'm like, this guy's insane. This guy's crazy. That he's absolutely exactly the guy he was before the injury, before coming back, and where everyone again was concerned trolling with the compression vest that he was wearing or whatever the fuck you called it. And they were working over the fact that Kenny maybe is not ready to come back and all that bullshit. And I'm like, come on now. It's enough. I mean, that's enough. Stop it, you. I like that. Hey, look, the one thing that I didn't care too much about was Kenny's promo after the match. I felt he was a little too laid back, and I get it. It's Kenny's style, but I think he should have been a little more fired up, as opposed to being like, well, you know what, you know, oh, you like bringing in weapons. Well, how about next match? We all bring in weapons. How about that? How about we make it no DQ? Like, he was a little too smug in a situation where he should be like, you assholes, you cost us a match here. We're down two now because you sons of bitches can't stop cheating. You know, kind of thing. Of course, he would not use those terms. He doesn't even say hell. He says heck. He doesn't see, don't worry, he wouldn't curse, but a little fire here could have just done the trick. I know, and it's funny because then, you know, he starts his promo saying, you know, oh, you know, there's enough talk on tonight's program, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay. And honestly, there have been Dynamites where there's been a lot more promo segments than what we got here tonight. So him coming out and saying, oh, you know, there's a lot of talk, as if it's some kind of indictment. And so I'm like, okay. That was a strange comment. And, you know, he says, I don't want to drone on, but he drones on right into his catchphrase. Like, if you really don't want to cut a promo, if you really like, then use the babyface energy, the fire that you have. You like, you just got screwed out of a match. Okay, listen, I wasn't supposed to cut this promo, but I'm mad as hell. I'm mad as hell. And the Jacksons are too. So next week, our next match, how about we make it no DQ, motherfuckers? And it's like, there you go. There you go. MJF is backstage. He gets interviewed, of course. Cuts a fantastic promo because it's MJF making fun of Ricky Starks for growing up poor. He says, yeah, you know, I grew up rich, attractive, and witty. He's just better than him and all the people that he looks up to. And he's going to see if the pebble will turn into a diamond under the pressure or get crushed to dust. So not only does he consider, you know, by this analysis here, not only does MJF consider Ricky Starks to be a pebble, but a small lump of coal. Very precisely, right? Because it's coal that gets pressurized into diamonds. The Acclaimed come out. They do their shtick. But they get attacked by Sanjay's boys. I think that's what... Like, this group needs a name. It needs... I'm going to call them Sanjay's boys until they actually come up with something. But we're talking about Satnam Singh, Jeff Jarrett, Jay Lethal... Like, all right, let's just move along. You know, I at this point, I feel like this feud is beneath the Acclaimed. Does that make sense? It doesn't, like, the Acclaimed come off arguably the biggest win of their career by knocking out FTR last week in a very good tag team match, knocking them out of title contention for a while. And we're heading into Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal as a... And I'm like, brother, come on now. And I really don't know if this is the best use of Jeff Jarrett. I don't know. This is something that I have trouble then counter-arguing with people who are like, where's Miro? Where's Scorpio Sky? You know? When this is on Dynamite, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like this is a perfect Rampage type of match, despite the fact that Tony's like, no, we're going to focus on Rampage and we're going to get the big names out there. But like, this is, I don't know. And this is not a knock on the Acclaimed. Like I said, I think this is under, this is beneath the Acclaimed. This is absolutely under them. So at this point, you know, it's like, yeah, give me Miro instead. You know, why not have Miro hunt the Acclaimed at this point and being like, you know, I'm going to find myself a partner. You know, the Redeemer is going to find himself a partner to help redeem. I don't know, whatever. He can work it out. He can, I'll let Miro work out the finer details. Did you know what I mean? There's something else that could be done here. Chris Jericho of the... basically, what I'm saying is that I'm not interested in this feud one way or another, and I'm not even all that excited about the match. But it will probably just add another notch to the Acclaim's belt, which is fine. Chris Jericho and the Jericho Appreciation Society are interviewed backstage. He calls the... They talk about him losing the title to Claudio this past Saturday at the final battle. And he calls the big swing barbaric, and it should be banned. And he's going to take up a match against a jobber tonight because he needs a tune-up for his inevitable rematch with Claudio. Or so, he says something to that degree. It's like my necessary, like, you know, he's basically saying, it's like, I got to work the kinks out, and I'm coming for you, Claudio. And then he tells Daniel Garcia that it's okay that he lost the Pure Championship to Wheeler Yuta and just needs a little guidance, a little seasoning, I think was the term that he used. And he said he should shadow his elder, Sammy Guevara, and learn a thing from or two from him. Then Sammy cuts a promo on John Moxley because they're having a match on Friday. But let's just go back just a little bit to the most newsworthy item out of this. I hate this Daniel Garcia having to be mentored by Sammy Guevara. I hate this so much that I love it. This is 100% designed for internet viewers, for people watching on the internet who despise Sammy, who can't stand him, but on the opposite spectrum, love Danny Garcia, because that's the thing, right? Like, this is your pure wrestling fan's worst nightmare. Like, the absolute, you know, most go-away heat guy in the company having to shadow the internet darling, Daniel Garcia. It's priceless. And I don't know who came up with this idea, but it is brilliant. And you can already tell that Garcia is into it. And like I said, I hate this so much that I love it. And it is the perfect, it is the perfect heel angle where to me, there is so much to squeeze out of this and to make people like mad, but in a good kayfabe way. It's infuriating and brilliant, and I love it. There's a lot of fun there. I mean, look, and the blow-off match, Sammy versus Daniel Garcia, won't be terrible by any stretch of the imagination. It's not going to be a bad match. You know, maybe for some of the more incensed detractors, the more incensed Guevara detractors, they probably won't get excited about this for at all. You know, the prospect of this match, but you know, the payoff won't be terrible. Jack Perry, the Jungle Boy, calling him more and more Jack Perry as we're moving along here, defeated the machine, the Brian Cage. And Brian Cage tosses Jack Perry around, does the deadlift suplex. Perry avoids a drill claw, but eats a lariat that just takes him right down. He hits a destroyer on Brian Cage, goes for the snare trap, but Prince Nana distracts. Jack Perry avoids a discus lariat as Nana is distracting the ref by Brian Cage, and Cage knocks out Nana instead, which allows Jack Perry to get the pin on Brian Cage. Look. And then after he gets on the microphone and says he's, you know, he took down Luchasaurus, so he's ready to take down Big Bill Morrissey. And they're really leaning into the Big Bill. And like I said last week, I think it's great. That's how they should call him. That's 100%. I like it. It is a great pro wrestling name. Big Bill. Big Bill Morrissey. W. Morrissey, Big Bill Morrissey, big. You want that alliteration. You just want that. It works. So he says he wants to take down Big Bill Morrissey after he took down Luchasaurus because Big Bill Morrissey was one of the components that cost him his spot in the Dynamite Ring Battle Royal thing last week. Dynamite Diamond Ring Battle Royal. So he wants his revenge. He wants his pound of flesh. He went after Brian Cage, was also part of that. Now he's coming after Morrissey. I'm down with that. Again, you know, like people going, why is he going after these people? Christ, does anyone watch this fucking show? You know, does anyone watch this program? Because I haven't missed a step. I don't know. I talked about this, you know, maybe I'm on a higher level of intelligence than, you know, the average person. And if so, well, so be it. You know, I'm completely okay with that. But also, you know, I also think that people don't watch the fucking show. I think people don't watch the show. Because, like, well, why is Jungle Boy after Brian Cage? Because he fucked them over. Like, he was part of the people that eliminated him at the Battle Royal. Why is he going after Morrissey? Same thing. And on top of that, I like this. And it is a classic story, and it works perfectly into Jack Perry's very natural babyface instincts. I like this story of Jack Perry being this giant slayer. The guy, small guy, you know, wiry, coming in, taking down behemoths, right? He took down Luchasaurus in one of the best matches, one of the best cage matches I saw the entire year. And just matches, period. That match ruled. Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy, it ruled it, over-delivered, it was great. Then he takes down Brian Cage, now he's coming after Morrissey, like, he doesn't give a fuck. He's not going after the cruiserweights here, you know what I'm saying? He's not going after the junior heavyweights, he's going after the big boys. The biggest boys, not even the big boys, the biggest boys. What if the payoff down the road is him and Miro? That rule. Then you got something here. But, As he's on the mic here talking about wanting to fight Big Bill Morrissey, Stokely Hathaway shows up and he says Jungle Boy pisses him off to the highest level of pissivity. I didn't know that there were layers to pissivity. I'm learning new things every week listening to Stokely Hathaway teach me things. I didn't know passivity as a concept existed, and now I realize there's layers to it, or, you know, pillars. Is it something like Scientology? Where, I don't know. And Stokely says to Perry, he says if he keeps it up, he's going to see two things: the bottom of Big Bill's boot, and the back of Stokes' hand, because he's a little hoe. I mean, Hathaway comes out and he just takes everything over. So Lee Moriarty comes out and Big Bill as well. They start beating him down. Stokely's on the mic and he goes, that's right, whoop his ass. He says they should have music playing. Rest in peace, New Jack. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. This was great. Like, you know, I was enjoying this a great deal. They drag Jack Perry back to the ring and Big Bill chokeslams Jungle Boy in the ring, and who comes to save him? Who comes to save our boy Jack Perry? Hook. Everyone takes a powder for this pairing. I didn't, like, until you see it, until you see these two lads in the ring, face to face, shaking hands. Until you see it, you did not know how cool it was. Like, this works. This fucking works. And as we were talking about in the Discord, I am excited, which you should join, by the way, Mr. Warren Hayes Discord. Listen, link is in the description. If, as we were talking about, we cannot wait. For Hook to suplex, like to T-bone Big Bill Morrissey, right? And then Taz, just very, on commentary in the meantime, just very, very coolly, just like breaking down, you know, how Hook, you know, popped his hips to get the extra leverage necessary, and his technique was perfect to lift it. Like, just a full fucking circle moment. This rules. Like, this is a perfect partnership for these two guys. You can put them in tag teams. They can watch each other's backs. They're on a same type of course right now. This was one of the most exciting moments of the show as far as promise, as far as development, new things happening, a new bump for Jungle Boy and Hook at the same time. Two guys who have a tremendous future in the company and in pro wrestling, period. This pairing is awesome. And it's fresh. And I'm excited to see it. This is something where we're like, yeah, let's go. This is something, and I'm not alone. And this is, you know, I'm nothing special. I'm not alone in this. And this is going to be one of these things where week after week, people are going to be like, well, "Where's Hook and Jungle Boys?" You know, it's going to be one of those. The Blackpool Combat Club sans Brian Danielson are backstage in a pre-tape. John Mockley says that they were going to make a statement. You know, at Final Battle, Wheeler Yuta smashed Daniel Garcia's face in with his elbows. Claudio Castagnoli swung a grown man until he wanted to puke. And on last Friday, choked out Kenosuke Takeshita like a sack of potatoes. I've never choked out a sack of potatoes. But I know what I'm doing this weekend. You know, go to the market. You know, it turns out, you know, the 10 pounds of potatoes are on sale this weekend. So, gonna work on my bulldog choke. Claudio says in 2023, you want to pick a fight, you think you're good. Well, they're better. Wheeler says you want to fight, you got to be willing to fight like you're gonna die or something to that effect. And it was really fun. As a side note, you know what was funny here? You have these three guys of the BCC, right? And Mox cuts his promo, you know, with that gravelly John Moxley voice, you know. Then you have Claudio, you know, Swiss, with that deep baritone that he has, you know. And then you have Wheeler, his voice like comes out of his throat. It doesn't like resonate through his chest. It's like coming out like, and the dissonance. His promo was fine, don't get me wrong. He delivered it perfectly. But, you know, you had the gravitas coming from these two, you know, older fighters, you know, with the Prestons and the charisma. And Wheeler Yuta's there, like, sounding like he's out of college kind of thing. Which is fine, don't get me wrong. I'm not shitting on the promo. It's just the juxtaposition of the three was funny. Moxley promises he's going to leave Sammy Guevara a bloody mess and leave him for dead. And Hangman Page says, well, you know where to find me, and bring your Dark Order buddies while you're at it. So, okay. Let's see how that goes. The House of Black defeated QT Marshall, Aaron Solo, and Cole Carter. Everyone got destroyed before the bell rang. You know, Buddy, mostly Buddy Matthews and Brody King, right? Just tore the shit out of everyone. Who was it? You know, and Cole Carter took a nasty bump on the table. I think it was Cole Carter who took a nasty bump on the table. Julia Hart missed it. Nick Camarado to start all to get all of this, but Malakai Black just black masked the face off of QT Marshall, who just dropped. And House of Black got the win. I like that. I mean, look, this is what people wanted, right? This is what folks wanted. They wanted the House of Black to come in and be dominant. And this is what you should do. Look, we've, you know, been telling y'all for weeks, the Factory, QT's boys, you know, they're geeks. They're dopes. They're prelim guys. They should not be on the same level. Because people are like, well, they should have got a match. No, they shouldn't have. Not in this. Not unless you want the House of Black to be like one of the guys, one of the boys. They should absolutely destroy QT's geeks. That's what they're for, regardless, because they're nerds, they're geeks. This is what it's for. And they're not on the same lane as these boys are. Absolutely not. They're in completely different lanes, three lanes removed. And look at what Tony Khan is doing right now. He's setting up the House of Black to be big time competition for the Elite. Because we know the Elite are winning the Trios titles at the end of this series, right? Of course. But they're setting up the House of Black to be dangerous contenders. Now, when they eventually fight the best friends, the best friends should put up a fight. Because the best friends aren't prelim geeks. Orange Cassidy is a champion. He's one of the top acts of the company. Everyone likes Trent and Chucky. Like, they're a good mid-card act. So they're not curtain jerkers. They're not prelim weirdos. That should be a little more of a competition. But it should be handled handily. How about that for some vocabulary? By the House of Black. They should dispose of the best friends fairly easily. We get a video package for Jamie Hayter and Hikaru Shida, their match that's happening next week for the AEW Women's World Championship match. Then we switch over to Britt Baker. She's interviewed backstage. Sky Blue arrives and asks if she can wrestle as good as she runs her mouth or something to that effect. And they set up a match for Rampage. And Britt's reaction at the end is like, was that Sky Blue? Was that? That's insane. That's insane. Like, she's like, is this chick just popping up here saying, hey, you know what? I got your number. And Britt's like, no, dearie. Are you all right? Have you been taking your meds? I like that. I thought it was, you know, it's these little things that I really like about Britt Baker. That, again, I don't understand why people hate her so much. This is fantastic. And God bless Sky Blue. You know, still terribly uncomfortable on promos, but you have to throw them into the deep end. Sometimes it's got to be like, look, here you go. You know, and she tried to give some personality to what she was doing. You know, she did at some point, or, and it was like, oh, this is so rehearsed. But she gave it her best. It was what it was. It was all right. But again, like, if you never throw people into the deep end, you'll never know. They'll never grow. They'll never try. You'll never find out what needs to be done, kind of thing. So good for her, I guess. And then, and then Chris Jericho lost to Jobber Action Andretti. And what a moment. What a pro wrestling match this was, and completely shocked, and I loved every fucking second of it. Cause I'm sitting down and I'm like, okay, here we go, Chris Jericho getting a squat. And I had people on Twitter responding to me to stuff I was answering. Of course, you know, they have to put Chris Jericho on TV and give him a job. And like, whatever. But Jericho started playing with his food at first until Andretti lands some forearms. And the crowd is into it. The crowd is super, super against Jericho. Like, they don't give a shit about Jericho. And they're completely on Action Andretti's side because they know Jericho's here to beat him, right? So they're... The crowd is having some fun with this, and good for them, because the audience here added so much to this match. They made this match what it was. Let's go Jobber chants. They didn't even bother to listen to Justin, what's his name? They didn't even, they didn't even take the time to register this dude's name. How convinced they were that this guy was going to lose. Let's go Jobber chants. I've heard this in the past, like, not often, but I've heard that, and you don't hear that a lot. This was hilarious. Jericho goes for a code breaker, covers, but Andretti kicks out to a huge reaction from the crowd, and Jericho is looking a little despondent. He's like, he has a look on his face like, oh, wait a second, what's going on here? He's a little worried. Andretti fights back, poked to the eye by Chris Jericho. But Andretti hits a neck breaker, a split-legged moonsault. He dodges a Judas effect, throws Jericho to the floor, double jump acai moonsault by Andretti. Like he, and the crowd is on their feet for this. Jericho tries for the walls, but Andretti rolls him up. People are like, oh shit. And at this point, I'm like, oh, okay, all right, all right. We're getting one. And this is like a near 10-minute match. And we're going, okay. Like they're giving him the extended. This is what my brain is saying. We're giving him the extended hope spot. And, you know, Jericho's gonna, you know, he's gonna land the Judas effect out of nowhere kind of thing. So I'm like, okay, you know, they're playing with us. They're toying with us. They're establishing, you know, that Jericho, you know, Jericho's a little shaky, but, you know, everything's fine. But no, Andretti hits a tornado DDT and a running shooting star press covers Chris Jericho, gets the pin clean as a fucking sheet. Like, there's no foul play, no nonsense, no Jericho Appreciation Society members that distract, that caused any problems or any suppositions that, oh, maybe Andretti, you know, had it not been for Matt Menard screwing this up. No, 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 no. There was none of that. Clean as a sheet victory. And I loved every second of this match. I loved, and I thought it was phenomenal. And isn't this what's great about pro wrestling? Just comes out of absolute nowhere. You have all your smart fan predispositions here. My brain wasn't registering that this kid was going to win. Like, in no way. Because you're like, this is Chris Jericho and he's coming, you know, coming off of a loss. They're going to, you know, he's going to want to show that he's still the Ocho. He's still the big man on campus kind of thing. But no. Au contraire, they're building a story clearly by the reaction that Jericho had. They're building a story where he's going to start some self-doubt, apparently, because he was like, I just lost to a jobber. And he had called him a jobber. You'll recall, he used the word, the term, the insider term, much to Eddie Kingston's dismay, I'm sure. But he used the term jobber backstage. He did. And he just completely lost. Nothing. And Action Andretti, moment of his career, like the highlight of his career. Audience on their feet. This Texas crowd. This wasn't a Corpus Christi audience. I'll tell you what, folks. This was a hot audience throughout the show, but they came alive for this. Garland, Texas, you played such a part in making this match special because this match was special. Don't get twisted. And this is exact. Look, this is straight in what you need to do to make an upset winner look like $1 million, right? Because, you know, WWE do this, you know, and, oh, Nikki Cross got a win over Charlotte Flair, whatever, you know. It's like, but it's always like, oh, roll up, oh, bit out of nowhere. Or, you know, someone distracted Charlotte, someone came out, Ronda Rousey came out, and then someone rolls up Charlotte and gets the win. Whoa, you know, and you're like, sure, but, you know, we've seen this, you know, a million times, and it's not all that clean. This was, he hits a move, a running SSP. Is it his finisher? Maybe. It should be at this point. Hey, look, if you take out Chris Jericho with a running shooting star press, you're like, yeah, man, this is my finisher moving forward. You know what I mean? So he ends the match with a move, gets the cover. This is exactly how you... This is exactly what you want to do if you want to build a new star. If this is what you want to do, if you want to get people invested, you want to get people to be like, yeah, let's go for this kid because he can carry this for a few weeks, depending on how he's booked, of course. But right now, like, everyone wants to see Action Andretti again. Everyone wants to shake his hand. Everyone wants to get his autograph. You know, indie promotions want to book him at a much higher rate now. You missed your opportunity there. You know, Jericho worked this match as if he was losing, as if he was, you know, it was, he was a step behind and it cost him, and it wasn't a fluke victory. It was like, no, this, he got owned. He absolutely got owned in this match. It was perfectly constructed. And that's why the crowd got into it. And despite all of my, you know, smart wrestling fan brains predispositions, they gave me a finish that I was not expecting. Now, what does this mean for Andretti moving forward? This is entirely up to the Booker man at this point. This is all a question of, what does Tony Khan want to do with him? He's got a little lightning in a bottle here. So we'll see what happens. Ricky Starks cuts a promo backstage, hyping up his match. He says he's winning the title tonight because he's got no other options. He's grinded and paid his dues, and it's all come to a head. And we move on to Ruby Soho and Ty Mello. Ruby Soho defeated Ty Mello here in a very good... I like this match quite a bit. I thought this match was very good because, again, the ladies wrestled and they stuck to what was essential and the story that they had to tell here. What was the story they had to tell? They didn't like each other. And Ruby was out to get a revenge. So this starts physical before the bell. Like, again, it's the little things. But this all makes sense. They didn't wait for their, you know, to... They didn't wait for, you know, all the normal proceedings. No, they get into it before the bell rings. Ty tosses Ruby Soho into the barricade a couple of times. Finally, they get back into the ring. The match starts, and Ruby starts dropping her with back suplexes over and over and over again. I'm like, let's fucking go. Mello drops Ruby with the hammerlock DDT up on the ramp. Double knees by a Ruby Soho as well. Pump kick by Ty Mello. They do a chop battle. Ty pulls out the gotch pile driver. Rest in peace, Suzuki-gun. Ruby Soho then, however, lands the Destination Unknown for the win. Strong, physical match. I love this. No nonsense, no, you know, trying to, you know, do pretty shit for the sake of doing pretty shit. This was a fight. This is straight up my alley. That's what we need to do with the women. After the match, though, Anna Jay hits the ring, attacks Ruby Soho, gets Ty back up to her feet. Who hits the... Ty KO, excuse me, for the post-match heat. This is what I mean sometimes. Again, this is an angle that it worked. It was perfect. Ruby got her big win. Wasn't tainted. There was no nonsense. Again, another clean finish. And then the angle happened after the match. This is why I keep, you know, harping on this shit sometimes with WWE, where it's like, it doesn't have to happen in the match. It can happen after the match. Let's give ourselves some clean, logical finishes. And do the heat spots after. It works just as well. Alex Marvez is backstage trying to get an update on Adam Page's condition, which is weird. But, you know, it's a weird lean-in to a great promo, though, by Adam Page, you know? People are like, we have to stop sleeping on Adam Page's promo abilities. Anyone who's still sleeping on Adam Page's promos, again, has not been watching the show. Hasn't been watching it for a year. Because Page has been cutting some of the best promos of his career since winning the AEW World Championship last year. So we're well into a year into this. Page's promos are fantastic. This shouldn't even be a point of discussion anymore. It's just, again, I just think people don't pay attention to the show. They don't watch it. Paige asks him, do you want to know if I still get migraines every morning? And if I'm cleared to wrestle Jon Moxley, right? Okay. And he says, what? And he tells a story that when he got into the ambulance after the match, EMT started to ask him questions, right? And the right answers came out. Questions like, where was he? What was the date? Who was he wrestling? And then the EMTs pull out his phone because they needed him to unlock it. And on his lock screen is his son. And he says, "And who? Is this your kid? What's his name?" And Adam Page says he couldn't remember his name for a solid hour. And you could tell he was getting choked up about it. And I was more than choked up about it. That shit resonates with me. So he says if Mox wants to fight him, he'll be there on Friday on Rampage. He knows where the ring is. But if he's going to go back to hell, he's going to drag John Moxley down with him. And I was like, all right. But Tony said, first of all, excellent promo. And this is the type of champion wrestler that Adam Page is. He's grounded. He's the grounded, relatable guy. And that's always what has been his strength. Just being so human and relatable. And that's something that they've leaned into to great success. Because again, he cuts this promo and you believe him and you're into it. And you're like, I support you, champ. I'm right there with you. He says if Mox... So again, he wants to fight Mox again and he's ready for it. But, you know, it's gotten personal. So, you know, just in case, you know... I think it's clear where we're going with this. I think we understand the motivations. Does anyone need more motivation? Does anyone, like, short of a video package at this point, is everyone good? Do we get it now? Is everything all right? And the second point I wanted to bring up here, Tony Khan said, you know, Rampage is going to be all hands on deck. You know, he said it before, but he says, well, you know, we're going to start sending the big names back to Rampage. Well, look, you know, we got John Moxley last week. We're getting him again this week. Excuse me, we've got a tease for Adam Page now. I think it's interesting. I think it's good to do that. I think it's good to rehabilitate Rampage that way. We've been doing this for a couple of weeks now. So I'll probably talk about it on Tuesday on the podcast. So make sure that you subscribe to the channel or the podcast feed. I'll probably talk about it on next Tuesday. But you know, I still think that this should be the hardcore fans show. I think, you know, again, like this was nonetheless the show that had Katsuyori Shibata show up on it, right? This is the show that had Jun Akiyama fight Eddie Kingston on it, right? Well, at least in a tag team situation. These are things that resonate to the hardcore fans and not to the more casuals, for lack of a better term, but for people who maybe aren't as invested into Japanese pro wrestling, let's put it that way. So I think that's still a good way to approach things. Sending your top stars there, of course, helps as well. Don't get me wrong, but I think a mix of both is crucial. And we get Dustin Rhodes and the Best Friends and Danhausen. They said they'll be crushing their opponents, Butcher and the Blade, Kip Sabian and Trent Seven on Rampage, this week as well. And the AEW World Title Dynamite Diamond Ring 2022 final match as well. Right? Got it all. World Title Dynamite Diamond Ring. For all the potatoes. The potatoes that were in a sack that got choked out earlier. MJF retained it all. Defeating Ricky Starks. What a great match this was. Again, I'm going to say it. We're spoiled. I don't want to wrap up Dynamite just yet, but this was great. Some taunts from both guys to start. They're taking their time. They've got time. They're going to take their time. Running shoulder block sends MJF to the floor. When MJF stalls to return, he does all the great heel shtick that a guy with his level of charisma can pull off. Going into the crowd and like going, no, I'm going to leave. Ricky Starks tries a bunch of pins on MJF, throws him off his game. MJF works a great heat segment. Just a classic stuff. He even has Ricky Starks in an abdominal stretch at some point. He's saying, and he's biting him. He's biting him on the ribs. I love that. Like, just a little something. I loved it. I thought it was great. Starks fights back, hits a tornado DDT. MJF goes for a hurricane run, it's blocked. Ricky Starks lands a Liger Bomb instead. MJF stomps the arm, starts working that a little bit because he's thinking about Salt of the Earth, of course. Powerbomb on the knee by MJF with rules. The boys slug it out, strong style, but MJF ends that with a poke to the eye. Mwah. MJF runs the ropes, a boot by Starks. MJF bounces back off the ropes, off the boot, with a rolling elbow. And Ricky Starks bounces back with a spear. Great little segment there. Ricky can't quite get the pin, but he eventually does. But MJF suckers him into the pin, where he grabs the arm and locks in the Salt of the Earth. Now, Ricky Starks tries to crawl to the ropes. MJF bars the arm. Ricky Starks reaches over then. MJF then grabs that free arm and pulls it back. So he's got like a bow and arrow type of situation here. Ricky Starks tries to use a leg to get to the ropes. MJF then grabs that like he's doing a stretch plum kind of situation. But eventually, Ricky Starks gets a foot on the rope. Just a good, smart spot that I dug so much. As much as as I pop out of my seat when Rey Fénix does an inverted frog splash, I'm like, Christ, this shit rules. I look at stuff like this and it's, Christ, this shit rules. And it's this, two different, completely different styles, but the way that it's executed, and in this circumstance, the logic behind it, the psychology that accompanies it, like, this is all brilliant. All brilliant. It all works. Side headlock takedowns, and I'm wondering how much of a callback that is to MJF talking about CM Punk when he said, you know, I could take you down with some side headlocks, or, you know, MJF bridges out of a pin after a little slip. There was just a little bit of mistiming here towards the end between the two, but, you know, he slips into a great reversal out of a powerbomb attempt, thrust kick by Ricky Starks. MJF is lifted up. Starks blocks a Hurricane Rana attempt again, goes for the Rochambeau. MJF slides out of it, uses the ref as a distraction to low blow Ricky Starks with a clean kick to the nuts. Small package, no pun intended. MJF retains. This was brilliant. I like, this is what I expect from a world title MJF. And he warned us, he told us what he was going to do. He told us that this would be the kind of thing that he would do moving forward. What kind of heel champion he would be. And how when he did his heel championship 101 promo after, you know, 2 weeks after winning the title or whatever. He broke down everything he was going to do. And if you weren't expecting classic heel work, like, I mean, classic old school heel work like he pulled out here tonight, I don't know what to tell you. This was brilliant. Ricky Starks, we knew he wasn't going to win. But the strength of his promo last week carried this match, carried him into this match with some great energy. And everyone feels bad for him. He'll be fine. He's going to rehabilitate from this and he's going to be extraordinary. This was a fantastic main event, which was capped off by Bryan Danielson running after MJF, coming out and running after MJF. We didn't see him with the Blackpool Combat Club earlier because they wanted to keep the surprise for now. All good stuff. Danielson, MJF, that's a program you can sink your teeth into, I'll tell you what. This whole show is a show you can sink your teeth into. This is a Dynamite that had that energy of those Dynamites that you absolutely love. Where everything has purpose and new things are happening and you're not getting overly bombarded with stuff. You know what? I forgot to mention, we even got a package for Swerve and Keith Lee. You know how I'm feeling a little off about it? Now I feel we're getting back on some rails. They're going to have a face-to-face. This is what should be happening. And I'm looking at Swerve and how menacing he sounds, how just like egotistical and menacing he sounds. And I'm like, this guy rules. No wonder they miss him in Hit Row. No, you know, I don't know who thought that Top Dollar was going to be able to carry that act without... Swerve is the real deal, man. Swerve is a superstar. Every fucking time he's on TV and he does something, he's a star. And it just added to an excellent episode of Dynamite where everything flowed, everything felt good, good rhythm without being like, you know, crash TV levels of, oh, we do this, we do this. Stuff had time to breathe. Fun matches. A great main event, a great unexpected moment like this. This is one that you show a pro wrestling fan. Someone maybe that's lapsed. And like, look at this shit. Look at how great all of this is. This is a good one. And I thought this review was pretty good as well. We're going to wrap it up. we're gonna end this one off right now. Subscribe if you haven't already. Leave a like. Some reviews over on the podcast side of things. I appreciate any support you can show me. That's fantastic. I will be back next Tuesday for another edition of the Mr. Warren Hayes Show, and again back Thursday for another AEW Dynamite review. In the meantime, have a great rest of your week, and I will see you next time.